Unfortunately, history does not permit clear prediction. History is a blend of the assumed and of the unexpected, even as each of us is a blend of habit and of creativity. About the only fact of which I am confident as I look ahead is what I believe to be the cardinal truth. The next 17 years will be not only challenging, but portentous. I believe that the next 17 years, the next two decades, will determine the course of history for many generations. But the decisions we make now will echo and reverberate down the corridors of time. And that these next years are going to make staggering demands upon our intelligence and upon our courage. A new world is being born. The embryo is alive. It's kicking so hard that the body politic hurts. The question is simply this: will a child be stillborn? We come to a hale, whole. And this question is not yet resolved. The staggering, cold, hot war problems of our days, the turmoil in our social fabric in our cities, the staggering problems of population and poverty, these are but the signs, the birth pains, if you will, of the new age. None of us can be sure that the child will be full-bodied, hopeful, or retarded. The future, well, the future is uncertain. There is opportunity. Our machines, our medicine, our technology, our research has given us great opportunity. The open question is this: have we the hands, the mind, the skills with which to mold and sculpt this opportunity so that it is functional, that it permits freedom and justice and opportunity? Or will the onrush of new invention, of more and more people, the changing, convulsive nature of this time ultimately overwhelm us, drown us in the pace and the rate of change? 1984, you will be at the height of your maturity. 1984 is, as you know, symbolic also of one of the classic prophetic novels of our time, George Orwell's story of the same name. Interestingly, this novel was published in the very year of your birth. And in that year, 1948, 1949, it became something of a cultural sensation. For Orwell said something that many thinking people had been whispering to themselves in the quiet of the night, and it was simply this: that the roseate dream of the future, the vision splendid which had been promised us in our schoolrooms and by our parents and by the media, might simply not come into being. That there was no guarantee that simply because we could produce a flood of consumer products, because we can control nature, there was no reason to assume that the world would necessarily be a rich, leisured, healthy, and happy place. During the first half of this century, men dreamed glorious dreams. We felt that the millennium, utopia, was just around the corner. The mind of man had been so skillful and so inventive that it had unlocked the secrets of nature. And armed with new powers and new controls, it would for once destroy the ancient scourges of poverty and disease that had riddled the family of men. And then came the Second World War. Dachau. laws of our world began to wonder aloud if indeed man was capable of taking advantage of that which was being placed in his hand. The simple Solomon equation, research plus power equals act. The thoughtful man saw another equation. Research plus power plus the weakness and the greed of men equals unspeakable harm. In 1984, in Orwell's hands, became a place of horror, a dread place, a ghastly nightmare place, dilapidated, hungry, bare, sparse. The standard of was much lower than we know it today. Man was not only controlled by the state, but brainwashed by the state, denied even the hope of the vision. Which would it be? 1984. What would the world be when you're 35? A wonderful, happy world, the world of our dreams, a bitter, despairing world, the world of Orwell, the nightmare world. For the answer is not yet clear. One thing is certain. The answer rests with us. Many of Orwell's direst predictions have not come true. He foresaw an atomic holocaust during the 1950s, and there was none. And yet much that he said has come true. The world is still at war. There was Korea, there is Vietnam. Maoism in China, which controls 750 millions of people, is very much the big brother, the doublethink of 1984. Freedom, slavery, ignorance, the strength, peace is war. Much has happened that we call progress in these last 17 years. It's hard to realize that in those intervening 17 years, the world has added 300 million people to the roll of its illiterates. There's been much progress in the last 17 years, but tonight, 1 in 2 in the world will go to bed hungry. There's been much whole talk of peace in the last 17 years, but each of us will go to bed tonight wondering when the war will explode beyond its present borders. Do not be lulled by the comfortable suburbia in which you are raised. Do not be gulled by the statistics of life expectancy, which are placed before you. There is no assurance that any of us will reach 1984. The world has simply not shown that it has the determination, the courage, the intelligence, and the discipline to take the new power. Take the opportunity which is here and now to use it wisely and constructively for the blessing of all and the hurt of none. We are not puppets. We are not automatons. There are no god or gods in the heavens who will write out the history. 1984 will be what we make of it. Nothing more and nothing less. Heavens belong to God. The earth belongs to the children of men. Now I look about myself at this world in which we live, and I find that many have signed out of it. I see many white-shirted, well-dressed men and women who have simply resigned from life. They go about their business, they earn their living, they won't dirty their hands. They want no part of the ugliness of politics of the marketplace. They want no part of the ugly responsibilities of building justice, of attacking privilege. So they throw up their hands. And they say, there's nothing that we can do. And these deserters from life are joined by another legion of deserters. Long-haired, unkempt, unshaven, younger usually. People who feel too sensitive to be sullied by life, who find themselves prisoners of a life that they did not make and who have given up on changing that life before they've tried. These are young people usually who turn within, who voyage into the depths of their own personality by drugs or by love in some philosophy. And these young people, like their more conventional and elderly counterparts, are simply denying life. They have turned in on themselves. They have closed themselves in from everyone about them. They want no part of the heavy responsibilities of building a better world. And our world simply cannot afford, as it teeters now on the brink of catastrophe, it cannot afford desertion. Those with skills and with ability, with opportunity, must pick up the burden and shoulder it. And it is a heavy burden. And it will break many of us. But it must be taken up. The second great truth of our tradition, which has been taught and is being taught and will be taught, is the simple proposition that the future must be one of greater justice and righteousness and opportunity for all. God has no special place for you or for me. There are no favored and no lesser breeds without the law. The vision which we have of the future must be a vision not of a society of privilege, but of a society of mass opportunity. And this inevitably implies that something will be taken from us, something of this superabundance in which we live, that we will be given opportunity to fulfill ourselves, intellectual challenge to be sure, but never of this affluence, this abundance which surrounds us. With half the world near starvation, it is surely incongruous that so many live amidst so much. We must take this ancient, prophetic, hard vision of our prophets, to show righteousness being established at the gates, not privilege, but righteousness. And we must make war against all those who now rule will keep the ancient privileges, the arrogancies of class and caste and wealth, hug them to them, deny them to others. The legion of deserters is not as large as the legion of the privileged who are trying to hold back the vision of the common man. The last 12 months, Brazil, the Argentine, and Greece, Southeast Asia, many places across the world. Freedom newly won, social reform newly begun, was rudely aborted by the forces of reaction of the past. And as you well know, in our own land, there are ideologues of the left and of the right who would turn back the clocks of time, who would arrogate power, privilege unto themselves. So second great truth which Judaism will teach and teaches and imposes upon you is that your objective, your vision, must be one which embraces all other men and asks not so much, what can the Lord do for me, but what can I do for the healing, for the betterment, for the blessing of all mankind. And the third great truth which Judaism teaches is respect for difference. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us all? Judaism has never claimed to be the truth, to have in its pocket the keys to the kingdom, to deny for any man of probity and character his rightful claim to saintliness and goodness. And yet our world is filled with ideologues, missionaries of economic philosophies, of political philosophies, of religious philosophies, who insist that what is right for them is right for all men. That upon the restless millions of Asia, the emerging tribesmen of Africa, and the metropolitan groups of Latin America, upon all people, one way of life must be imposed. One ideal, and that alone. So much of the battling which goes on in our world, the roaring and the bitterness, is because we are fighting false battles, needless battles, between ideologies, between men who are consumed with the false idea that they can profess the world. The battle between communism and capitalism is at root based on this fallacy. We wish to convert the world, each of us. The world wishes not to be converted. It wishes only to have the dignity of its own history, the beauty of its own past, the opportunity to evolve its own future. We must live in this world of 2 billions of people closely knit now by modern transportations of speed. We must learn to respect difference, to assume that what is right for us, our past, is good for us and true. What is right for another, his past, is good for him and true. And we must clear from our minds the cobwebs of false promises and false pledges, of doctrines which do not save, and dogmas which cannot fulfill their promise. The fourth truth of our faith, and basic to it all, is the affirmation that though the way be long, the times be dangerous, though the responsibilities be frightening, we do not walk this way alone. I am not alone. God walks with all those who seek the better world. God has never abandoned man to despair. God will not abandon his earthlings in this moment of crisis. There are reserves of strength within each of us, which can be mustered up, which can be awakened and used, if we but will to use them. If we but discipline our lives to a spiritual goal, God is with us, near to us, if we will but let him in. We are not alone, and the way is known. The responsibilities are clear, the opportunity is real, the future is there. Which shall it be? Your maturity. Weal or woe? The blessing, the curse, life. You listen to the four great